Over the years, as I've offered this information to groups ranging from maybe a dozen or so up to several hundred, I've asked people a question. I've done an informal little survey regarding prayer. And again, prayer is deep and personal. It's a very sensitive subject for many people. And I just take an informal survey with a show of hands, and I say, when you pray in your world, what kinds of things do you pray for? And I made little lists, and I've compiled these lists after about 6 months, and this is what I've found. And I'm not suggesting that this is a good representation of our population. More often than not, people pray for more money in life, better jobs, greater health, and better relationships, and they do it in this order. Well, we can use these components of the prayers in a little demonstration, and I'll just do this quickly. It's very interesting the way this works. If we view the components of prayer as thought, feeling, and emotion, and our prayer is for more money, what is the thought underlying more money? And more often than not, the thought says, I don't have enough money. The reason the prayer is in place is because they feel they don't have enough. So the thought is, not enough money. Now the ancients remind us, when they speak of emotion, that we are capable of two primary emotions, and all other emotions are expressions of those two primary emotions. We're capable of love, and whatever we feel that love's opposite is, whatever that means to us in our world. Okay? So if we're praying for more money, our thought is we don't have enough, then I ask, what is the underlying emotion to that thought? Is it love or is it fear? More often than not, the answer is fear. It's the fear that there isn't enough to go around. Where's my mortgage going to come from next month? Something like that. So when we look at this technology, if we merge the thought of there's not enough there with the emotion, the low frequency emotion of fear, we produce a feeling, and that feeling can have many words. It's kind of summarized as yuck. We don't feel good in our world because our thought is that we don't have enough of something, and the emotion is the fear of not having enough. The feeling is the vibratory template. That's what we put into our world to create. How interesting. When did we, in our inner technology, begin to create the feelings for the things that we least choose to have in our world in place of that which we most choose to have in our world? When did that happen? In other words, if our feeling, the union of the thought and the emotion, if the feeling is the vibratory template that allows us to create in our world, why not create with the feeling that which we most choose to have? What happens if we have the thought that there's plenty to go around and the emotion of what it feels like in that plentiness, the fullness of love, or whatever that means to you, creating the feeling of abundance? Well, the way that people respond to me in that moment is, yes, and it's not there. They say, why would we have a feeling about something that's not there, that's not present? That is the crux of the lost mode of prayer. Okay, so I'll ask you to hold that thought in mind just for a moment. Let's look at one more of these, and then we'll go forward very quickly. Better job. That was the second prayer. Better job. If we're asking for a better job, the thought underlying that is something like, the job I have right now isn't good enough. The emotion, is it love or fear? If it's not good enough, more often than not, we're saying that there's a fear that this job isn't good enough or this job isn't going to last. And the feeling now that comes from the union of not good enough and the fear of not having enough, it's the same thing. It's that feeling of lack. It's the feeling that invites us to go through life in a contracted state of lack rather than the expansive state of abundance. And I think just from these two examples, as you're listening to this, you see a pattern develop and you get the idea. In the past, our conditioning is we have prayed in some respects, in some instances, for the things that we believe we don't have enough of in our world, and our prayer has been the prayer based in lack. How interesting. The ancients remind us, and this is one of the tenets that was lost 1700 years ago, in acknowledging that we are desiring more, what we are actually doing is consenting to the less. and acknowledging desire for more, we consent to lack. Energy follows our attention. How many times have we heard that again and again? Energy is focused now on the lack. And the question then comes up, have we fallen into the ancient trap of focusing our attention on what we do not have or what we least choose to have in our world? Think about what this means in your lives, in all of our lives, because we're in this together. We have this common conditioning in the West that only occurred about 1,700 years ago. How can we change that, and what does that mean in our lives? This gets really interesting. Historically, in the West, prayer researchers, there are people who have researched and compiled many modes and expressions and applications of prayer. One of them is Margaret Paloma. She has identified four modes of prayer, and researchers pretty much agree upon this in the West, that we use today. We use these four modes individually or sometimes in combination with one another. The first of those modes is considered to be a colloquial prayer. We speak to our Creator in our own words, informally. We describe the problems or we give thanks. Petitionary prayers. Petitionary are also informal. It's where we ask for specific things or specific outcomes or maybe better health for ourselves or for others. We're petitioning the creative forces of our world for that which we feel we deserve or that which should be so in our lives. Ritualistic prayers, the third mode, can be considered a repetition of some predetermined sequence of words. Now I lay me down to sleep. Pray the Lord my soul to keep. That's a ritualistic, predetermined set of words, a ritual we go through at bedtime, or God is great, God is good. The fourth mode of prayer, and there are some individuals who consider this a non-prayer because it is meditative in nature. In the meditative form of prayer, it's where you move beyond words, you move into a stillness, you're aware of this holy, sacred presence around you. You become the empty vessel through which the wisdom of creation may find a place within your body. And for some individuals, the word meditation and prayer are mutually exclusive, and for others, meditation is actually a form of the prayer. Researchers pretty much agree that we use one or some combination of these modes of prayer in the West today. And as I examined these modes of prayer, became very clear to me that through the ancient and esoteric traditions, they reference a type of prayer, a form or a mode that doesn't fit into any of these categories. And that's what led me to ask, is there a fifth mode? Is there a lost mode of prayer? And if so, where did we lose it? And what would our lives be like today if it were part of our knowingness? And that led us on a journey through the sacred texts and through some of the great libraries and monasteries, from St. Catherine's Monastery at Mount Sinai in Egypt into some of the esoteric translations here in the States, eventually into the monasteries and the nunneries in the highlands of Tibet, over 15,000 feet in elevation. And in those places, they all reference this lost mode. And the lost mode, the fifth mode of prayer, is a prayer that is based in feeling. Okay, remember, feeling is the union of thought and emotion. The fifth mode of prayer is a prayer based in the feeling that your desire is already accomplished, even if maybe you haven't seen it come to pass in your world.